This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
This is Mason Vera Payne, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thanks for tuning in. I've had dogs all my life, and each one had different habits and personalities. Joining me to speak about dog breeds and how to match your personality to one is author and dog whisperer Dominic Hodgson. Thanks for joining me, Dominic.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Could you tell me, where did you get the title dog whisperer from?
It means dog trainer, really, you know? I think people think that dog whisperers have sort of special powers, that they can do things that other people can't with their dogs. But what I've tried to do is kind of demysticize the whole dog whisperer thing and try and make it so that anybody who owns a dog can learn how to connect and bond and train him and, you know, get the dog to do whatever you want him to do.
Do you think that certain breeds are easier to train, or is that kind of a myth in itself?
Yeah, some breeds can certainly, like working breeds, like pointers and collies, dogs that were bred to do a specific kind of job, they can often be easier to train, you know, because they're set up for that. They're set up to do things for you. They want to work. They want to do stuff. Problems tend to come when we don't provide enough of an outlet for those kind of dogs. If we don't provide an outlet for their energy and their need to their drive to do stuff for us, that can display itself in behaviors that we don't want, like chewing up the furniture or, you know, running away from us in the park, that kind of thing.
Yeah, my aunt recently got a puppy, and it's a pit bull. But it's 5 months old and it's eating everything.
I hear that a lot.
What would you do with a dog? Because when they're young like that, they're going through teething too. What can you do for them to help them with the teething process?
So, you know, a lot of things that dogs do, they do because they're just dogs. You know, their dogs like to chew, they like to play, they like to run and explore. So we need to provide an outlet for that as the owner. So there are a number of, there's never been a better time to be a dog now. You know, there's any number of dog products and services out there. And there's some fantastic, Kong are a really popular make. But there are all kinds of dog treat dispensers that you can get to put the dog's food in. And then rather than the dog emptying the bowl in 60 seconds, you know, it'll take them maybe 10, 15, 20 minutes just to eat his normal, regular ration of food out of a specially designed treat dispenser. And that'll exercise the dog's brain as well. That'll make him think, and that'll make him tireder.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what my aunt needs, is to tire out this little puppy. When they're puppies, though, you kind of want to have an idea of what their personality is, because I'm thinking of, like, when I first got my dog, and she was the runt of the litter, but she wasn't very active. And I was like, oh, that's the perfect dog for me. She's going to just lay around with me all day. And I got her home and she was anything but that. And, you know, 13 years later and she's still, you know, hyperactive.
Yeah.
How can
be quite deceptive.
Yeah. Well, how can you tell what a dog's first personality is going to be? Like, are there little signs that you're like, oh, this dog's going to be super active?
I would say mainly the main signs will come from the breed characteristics of the dog, you know. So, like I said, a working dog or a dog that's been bred to do a specific job is going to usually be more energetic than a traditional kind of a lap dog, you know, or a dog who's more suited to being like a house pet, you know, and a companion dog. So that's not the first thing, that you would try and choose a breed based upon the type of personality that you have, you know, and the type of things that you like doing. So if you like going for sort of 10-mile runs, then probably a pug probably isn't the best choice for you, you know. But a working dog like a Weimaraner or a Pointer or a Labrador or something like that, you know, they're going to really enjoy those type of things, and you're going to be a perfect match then. It's like it's a bit like a Ferrari, you know. A Ferrari is a fantastic car for doing a certain kind of job, but it won't be much use on a farm or in really snowy conditions, you know.
Yeah. The dog I have, by the way, it's a little Boston Terrier. She's a little mixed breed.
Oh, lovely, lovely. Yeah. We look after one of those regularly.
Yeah, you know, I love my little dog, but I really expected her to be more passive, but I find it so funny because she has such a large prey. Like, she loves chasing things, and she has caught a bunch of rabbits already, but I'm completely shocked that she would be so prey-driven.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes it's just something that they can learn to do, you know, so they can learn to enjoy chasing things, and then it becomes something that they look for, you know, when you take them out. So if the dog runs after a rabbit and he enjoys it, even if he doesn't catch it, he might think, oh, well, that was a fun thing to do. You know, next time they go to the park, I'll look for another rabbit and hopefully I'll catch him next time.
When it comes to the training portion, I mean, like you said, that's something that obviously my dog likes to do. She does like to chase everything and anything. And if she can get it in her mouth, she'll play with it. But how do you train a dog, like, if you didn't want them to do that? What are the steps you could take?
Well, usually, like, often I'll hear from owners that they'll say, you know, when I suggest that it's a good idea to play with the dog and try and get the dog playing a game with you, obviously it's going to be easier to control him, you know, off-lead, because the dog's going to want to be with you. And the owner will say, well, he doesn't like playing with me, he just likes chasing rabbits or playing with other dogs or whatever. And if your dog does like chasing rabbits or playing with other dogs, then he's telling you that he's still playful, you know. He just doesn't find the owner as interesting as he does the rabbit or the other dog. So I would start by, you know, stopping the dog from doing the thing that you don't want him to do. So you could possibly leave a long lead on him or not go to that area where there was rabbits or other dogs or whatever it is that's distracting your dog. And then, you know, either maybe stay at home or go in your garden or find a quiet place to go and just get to know your dog a little bit better. Find out some things that your dog likes, be it food or toys or whatever. You know, dogs like all kinds of different things. And use those things to sort of influence your dog and just to get him moving around and playing with you. And, you know, quite often you can use something like, I call that like finding the kryptonite. You know, if you can find the kryptonite, that thing that your dog really loves, it'd be much easier to control.
What do you do when you want to introduce another dog to like an older dog? Like mine, she's 13 years old, and I was thinking of getting a puppy. But I'm not really sure how she would react to another dog in general. I mean, she's gone after rabbits. I'm not sure I kind of trust her with a puppy.
You know yourself, and anybody with a dog will know whether their dog particularly likes other dogs or not, or whether they find them too stimulating, or whether they get aggressive when they see another dog, or, you know, different types of dogs. Some older dogs don't like puppies particularly because they're puppies, you know, because they do puppy things, they do silly puppy things, and older dogs, often they can't really be bothered. And this is a problem that I see a lot, where dog owners will have a dog, and the dog will be perfectly well-behaved or reasonably well-behaved, and they'll be really happy, and they'll introduce another dog into the mix, and now all of a sudden, first dog don't like the second dog so much, and it can be quite difficult, you know, especially when the dog's older, because obviously it's going to be a bit more set in his ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I think of that myself. Like, this dog, she has her own little pattern. She likes to wake up at 7:30 in the morning. She knows what time to eat. She likes having her water to herself. And I'm like, maybe I shouldn't mess up her schedule.
I mean, I think that's a really sensible idea. It's like when we have, you know, nieces and nephews come round to visit, and we invite them for tea, and we have a fab time. But then we can send them home again at the end of the day, you know, so it's great. Well, if you got another dog, obviously you can't just get rid of the other dog, can you? You're going to be stuck with it, and your first dog's going to be stuck with it. So I think that's very sensible.
I know, but you know what it is? She's such a good dog. She was so easy to train, and I have this weird notion that if I get another dog, like a little puppy, that she'll be able to help train it along the way. Do other people think that too?
Yeah, they do. And I'll be honest with you, I prefer the, you know, even if you have two or three dogs, I prefer the owner to have the idea that they're going to be the one that the stimulation's coming from, you know. The dogs can all get on, and, you know, we want the dogs to get on and stuff, but often the first dog, like what you're describing with your dog, will be the dog who listens to the owner, and then the second dog will listen to the first dog because he's the one that the dog will bond with more, you know, rather than the owner if they're left together. So the second dog becomes much more difficult to control, not because he's a bad dog, but just because he's learned to bond with the first dog, you know, so he doesn't have that kind of strong bond with the owner that the first dog had.
Do you think that there are common mistakes dog owners do? Like, even if they're like in my case, I've had three or four dogs already from childhood till now. Are there mistakes that people who have dogs for a long time often make?
Yeah, for sure. Like all the time, you know, mistakes I make as well. I'm, you know, I'm a dog trainer, but I'm not perfect by any means. We all make mistakes. We all forget, you know, from one dog to the next, if the dog might live for 10 or sometimes 15 years. And then by the time we get another dog again, we think, oh, it's going to be easy like it was the last time. But often we forget, we look back to a sort of rose-tinted glasses to how well our last dog behaved. And then the next dog comes and it's like, oh, my God, you know. But often these are just things that, yeah, we allow the dog to do, you know. We allow the dog to to do things that maybe our older dog did when he was older, you know, so we allow him too much freedom at the park or when we're out walking him in the woods and stuff. And so the dogs learn to get too interested in squirrels and pheasants and rabbits and this kind of thing, and they become just much more difficult to control because we've allowed them to become too interested in these things that we can't control.
I like that, because that's exactly what happened to me. When I was a kid, I don't know how we lucked out, but every dog we got from the animal shelter was professionally trained. So we lucked out. So when I finally got this little Boston Terrier, you're right. I was thinking, oh, this is going to be so easy. And, you know, she's just a little puppy. And I remember when I got her, she fit in the palm of my hand. She was that small, you know, being the run of the litter. Oh, it was horrible. It was horrible housebreaking that dog.
What's the dog called?
Oh, I call her Asia. I don't know why. All the dogs I've owned as a child, they were named after a country.
Right.
So I continue the tradition. But when people are looking, like maybe even if they're new to dogs, what would be a good breed for somebody to take on?
Really, I would suggest doing some research. I couldn't name one dog that would be a perfect dog for somebody. You know, it would really depend on your personality, your lifestyle, how much time you had to spend with the dog, what you like doing, you know, if you try and get a dog that's going to fit in with your kind of lifestyle. This doesn't mean to say that you have to be home all the time, because you know dogs can be trained using a crate and stuff to be left alone for a couple of hours at a time, and there's dog walkers and daycare and this kind of thing that we can use to help us to manage the dog better. But you know, the more time you do have to spend with the dog, especially when you first get him, the better bond you're going to have, and making sure that the time that you do have to spend with the dog is real quality time. You know, so when you're walking him, like you're not on the phone, that you're engaging with the dog, that you're playing with a ball or with a tuggy toy or taking a handful of cheese or chicken or whatever it is in your pocket and playing with your dog a little bit with those things and doing a little bit of training. And that's what dog training is. You know, then the dog's going to remember, oh, when I go to the park, I play with my owner, you know, or when I go to the woods, I play with my owner. He plays ball with me. And these are the really simple things that, you know, that my kind of philosophy that I teach to my students and in my book and that kind of thing, to, you know, just help people to have a bit more fun with their dog and a bit more control, really. So I couldn't put my finger on one particular kind of dog.
What about, like, animal shelters? For me growing up, I always got mixed breeds. There are mutts. So it wasn't any particular big breed. Like, the first dog we owned was a Doberman Pinscher, German Shepherd kind of Labrador mix. Mm-hmm. But she was the best dog ever. But a lot of people, they may be like, well, I want a purebred. Would that matter if you got a mixed breed?
No, not at all. No. We've had mutts. We've had mixed breed dogs in the past, and they've been, you know, as good or better behaved than the purebred ones. You know, I think there's a bit of an obsession these days with getting purebred dogs, the mutts and stuff. They're getting a little bit overlooked, but the shelters obviously doing a fantastic job in trying to get all these dogs rehomed. But often they can be the best kind of companion dogs, because they're not really going to display the characteristics of one particular dog. You know, you're going to, like what you got, you're going to get a bit of Doberman and a bit of German Shepherd and a bit of something else, and you sometimes get a more mellow dog, you know.
Yeah, I think my first dog, she was I always put her on a pedestal, because that, I mean, she was so big, and I remember 5 years old having this big, you know, red Doberman mix that was always following me around, and she was such a mother. But that, to me, that's like how I remember my little mutt. So when I see other dogs and it's like, oh man, you know, I was telling my sister that she should go to the animal shelter and just get a nice little mutt, but she kind of wants to get a Doberman. And anyways, it's a big thing that we're having a conversation between mutts versus a purebred.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that you just need to think a little bit further down the line, you know, and how's your life, think of how your life might have changed in the last couple of years. You know, how your life might change in the next few years coming up, you know, and are you going to be able to give that dog exactly what he needs, and or the space in your house, all this kind of thing, you know, all these, the different factors that you need to consider. And I'm quite a lazy dog trainer, so I would always get the easiest dog that I could.
I could see that. I think I would do that too, only because actually, that's a good one. Have you ever come across a dog that was so difficult to train, you're like, oh, I don't think I can do it?
Yeah, there've been a couple even, because I do some online dog training as well, and there've been a couple of instances where people have had dogs that were very reactive, like to other dogs, and they would they would spend a lot of time when they would, the owners would be quite stressed out because the dogs would be barking and lunging and growling at other dogs. And in some of these instances, you think, oh, you know, how am I going to be able to help this person, because it's just like a difficult dog, you know? But we just go back to basics and we try and help them to, you know, build up a better bond with their dog so that their dog listens to them more. The dog starts to see the owner as the provider of the food and the fun and the entertainment. And then, you know, in time, the more you do that, then the sort of the bad behaviors, they fade a little bit, and then the good behaviors increase, and the dog, you know, gradually just improve the dog's behaviors. But no, definitely some dogs are way more difficult than others, and not even by breed either. Just that's just how it is.
It was funny you said that by the breed, because I was thinking of another dog I had when I was a child. It was this little Chihuahua mix. And she was hilarious, a big personality. She loved people, but she absolutely hated every single dog she came across. And one of the biggest things that I remember about her is taking her to the vet, and she kind of picked a fight with the biggest dog in the room. And I'm thinking, this dog is 8 pounds, and she's barking at this dog, getting it all riled up. And I'm like, you do realize you're 8 pounds. But with her being that small, we never really corrected that problem. Was that kind of wrong as an owner? Like, should I have kind of, hey, don't bark at bigger dogs, or don't bark at other dogs at all?
You want to be careful, because obviously if a dog is, if the dog's fearful, you know, if it's fearful, then it, or it's showing a behavior that's letting you know that the dog might be fearful, you wouldn't want to be kind of, you would want to listen to the dog a little bit, you know, and think, okay, maybe we won't, if the dog doesn't like other dogs, then we won't expose it to other dogs as much. Or, but at the same time, you know, there would be nothing wrong with telling the dog no, or distracting the dog with a bit of cheese or a bit of chicken, you know, to get the dog to look at you. Or, you know, maybe to feed the dog, maybe in the presence of the other dog. And in time, that will, you know, the dog will think of that as kind of being a pleasurable experience, you know.
You know, for people who are listening, could you tell them where they can find you at?
You can go to my website, which is www.mydogssuperhero.com. That's two S's in the middle of that. And they can watch, you know, they can see we've got podcast episodes and blogs and that kind of thing on there. We've got a book as well, How to Be Your Dog Superhero. That tells us everybody, that will show you how to be your dog superhero, you know, and it kind of makes dog training really easy for dog owners. So that they can bond and connect and have a better life with their dog, more enjoyable.
With your book, can they find it on Amazon or any other bookstore?
Yeah, they can. Yeah, it's available as a like on the Kindle store on Amazon and on Audible as well. It's available as the audiobook from Audible with me narrating it as well.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here.
No problem, Mason. Thanks for having me.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter @MasonVeraPayne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.